Mr. Cowder and Reel 2, we'd come to the point on the 15th of November when you were actually called up. How did your family react to you being called up? And how did you react? What did you feel about it?
Well, in the first place, I was looking forward to it. So, I mean, we'd had this right from the beginning of the year. I mean, I'd had plenty of warning. I'd all the information that I would definitely got to go for 6 months. And then I broke my foot, and that was delayed. Now I was in, which I knew I would have to go in, because I'd already got two of us already in, one in the Navy and one in the Territorials. So it was, wasn't as big an effort as it might have been for somebody else. There's nobody in. And I knew there'd be some more of my brothers or family to follow me to go in. Anyway...
Did your parents mind? Did them?
No, they didn't mind. My mother didn't mind, providing I allowed her so much of my money, which was logic in those days. I mean, I wasn't paying board, even though I was 20, because I wasn't telling her to pay board. And not many people pay board in those days, not of the working class.
So now, where were you to go to when you were called?
I had to go to Oswestry. I was given the route to go, the actual train times to catch, all written down to me, and that was obeyed more or less to the letter. And I set off around about 10 o'clock in the morning, something like that. My girlfriend and my mother went to the station to see me off. Well, it might seem a bit silly to people these days, but those days it was a common thing. All the mothers saw the lads off, and the girlfriends. And I set off, I think it was somewhere around about 10 o'clock from Rotherham. The main thing I remember about was Crewe, and what an awful place it was, Crewe. Every train goes to Crewe, and every time you get to Crewe, you have to wait 2 hours. Well, I think we must have waited 2 hours, because it was dark when we got to Oswestry Street. I remember it was after tea, because the people that was there before us had their tea, so we were always left in the camps for those following on, and we got there after dark.
And how did they take you in? That was when you really joined the army, in a sense.
Yes, when I joined the army.
How did they sort you out when you got there?
Well, the sorting out, Oswestry, as all those that went to Oswestry will know, the army camp was built specifically for the 6 months militiamen. And our batch, I think, was the second batch that had been in huts. All the rest had been on the canvas, in the sludge, and everything for that. But we was in the huts. I think there'd only one set been in this particular hut before us. And we arrived at Oswestry Station. There's a special halt built at the camp entrance on the railway line, single line track, a special halt built there called
Park Hall Halt.
Park Hall Halt, that's right, Park Hall Halt. And there we were shepherded into the first place, into the canteen, into the cookhouse, and had a meal. And the sergeant or the NCO never left us. I don't know why. I think he thought we might run out through the door or something like that. But anyway, it was light inside, because I mean, the blackouts up and everything. But it was dark outside, so we didn't know what it was like outside at all. We went straight into the dining room, had a meal.
What did you think? That was your first army food. What was your reaction?
Well, all the food at Oswestry I found was quite okay. No, I had no complaints at all about the food at all. There's always plenty of it. And one thing that I could never understand to this day, we had margarine, sections of margarine between, a piece of margarine between where we were at the table, six or eight, with your bread on a hot breakfast, which we never had at home. If we had breakfast, hot breakfast, with bacon, beans or tomatoes or anything, it was dry bread. It was too luxurious to have margarine or butter with your bread at breakfast, with the hot breakfast. But anyway, and that carried on right through.
So you had your breakfast. How many of there were you?
Well, there'd be about 20 of us came down that. Eventually came into that on that train from the station.
And you were going to be a squad, were you?
Yeah. There was only two of us from Rotherham. And as we went on, as we went to Sheffield, we picked one or two up, probably in different carriages. And then on to Crewe, we picked quite a few up at Crewe because came from different parts of the country. Most of them were up. And we finished up, there'd be between 20 and 30 at the halt when we got off that train. And strange to say, it must have been detailed for that reason, because we all finished in the same barrack room in the same squad. And then next morning...
What were the barrack rooms like? These are these wooden huts, were they?
Wooden huts. The big wooden huts. And they were great. They got the room for the NCO at the end, the corporal, or bombardier in our case, at the end. Not a sergeant, it was a bombardier at the end. And beds down either side, proper beds, lockers, wardrobe type lockers. And well, we were really treated well and truly good. I mean, previous ones had been on the cameras and had it dropped, but we was all right.
Well, they were heated, were they?
There was a big small combustion smoke whiskey wood going to the centre.
Stove. And how did you settle down with this bunch of lads from all over the country? A lot from Liverpool,
well,
but
I thought the Liverpool lads were outrageous. The things that they come up with, they're real comics, all of them. But they'd had a rough life, that's why they volunteered. And they volunteered was in half a dozen gangs at a time. And because the next day, well, we were all tired. And I think we all slept that night. We just got a blanket and just matched to sleep on for that night. The next day we had to go through the usual army routine. Went marched down to this corporal took over, marched down to breakfast. And then we went to the quartermaster stores, picked the kit up.
What kit did they issue you with?
Everything that was required. We tried a battleless blouse on. If that looked like fitting, that was it. We tried put the tape down for trousers. If that was it, it was it. All the rest of the equipment that was given, the shirts, three pair of pants, two vests, three pair of socks, something like that. And that was all bundled in the arm, like you see on the films, carried down to the barrack room. We had no time to sort it out or anything. Just put it on your beds, I said, just put it on your beds, and out again. Next place was medical. If I bend down to stores, cough, you know, and hairdressers. Short hair, all those locks on. They were taking shorter than anybody else was, of course. Those were long locks.
Did you have short hair anyway?
My hair was normal, like it is now, just normal, like it is now. But some had long hair, because they hadn't wanted to kind of cut. These little poor lads, but it was cut for them anyway. Normal short hair. Back in size.
And what about your civilian clothes?
Well, civilian clothes, we were given two sheets of brown paper and a piece of string and a label. Now, if you got too much of those pieces of paper, it'd be your best, because it said there was no more. Because if you wanted any more paper, you brought too much luggage with you. Or if you got a case, you were all right. If you wanted a plastic case, it was better still, because you could fill it and tie it with a string. You didn't need the brown paper, so you could pass it on to those that needed it. Well, that was done. That was done later on in the afternoon. But to be bundled and ready for the next morning's parade, before the sergeant to go on to the square. But that night was the main thing. Trying the trousers on, trying the blouses on, the shoes, I mean, straightforward. If you took size 8, you got size 8. If you took size 7, you got size 7. There's no mess, you couldn't change them. But if your trousers were too long, you changed them with somebody that fitted you. If your trousers were too big or too small, you went round. Now, somebody would be stuck then with neither one way or other. Well, they could take them back that next day to the quartermaster stores and have them issue again, because not being warned, you see. Once they've been warned, you had to have them on to yourself, which we did. I mean, Charles in particular, I took many, I couldn't use a needle, and I've sewn many lads' trousers up, because they wouldn't change them at the quartermaster stores. But anyway, and that was it.
So that was your kitting out. Now, one thing we have now, who were you joining? Now, you'd gone to join the army, but you were actually in the Royal Artillery, weren't you?
Royal Artillery, sorry, I didn't mention that bit.
No, so that's who they. That was because of your trade, the technical side of things.
No, that was because it was expected that they'd need the mechanics in. But I got to find my own way into the mechanical side, they told me that.
So that you were just going to be a gunner?
A gunner, yes.
And what was the name of the unit that did your training with?
210, Heavy Attack Training Regiment, Oslo Street. And there was another one next door, 211, but we were so close together, but we were still parted. We never mixed on in the one big garrison canteen and garrison theatre. That's the only time that we mixed.
Now, what was it divided up into batteries, the regiment?
Yes, divided up into batteries and into squads.
And do you know what yours was?
I think we A, B, C, D, E, F. My squad was F. That's right, it is a T, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, isn't it?
F squad, and which squad? And which battery?
No batteries. No batteries.
No, you were in squads.
We were in squads.
Right. Now, what were your initial impressions of your NCOs, the sergeants and bombardiers?
Well, the NCO in our room, I got on quite well with him for a simple reason. His hometown was Rotherham. And he told me where he lived, and eventually, till I left, each time I went home, he lived with his mother by himself, so just him and his mother. And she knew I was coming because he'd already written to her, and she'd have a cake ready. And I always brought a cake back for him.
Do you remember his name? Was that the sergeant or the bombardier?
I can't remember the sergeant or bombardier's name. In fact, you might find them on some writing, but I can't remember them.
Offhand. That's all right. And what were they like? They were pretty sympathetic from the sound of it. How did they treat you?
Well, this is like all rest of army sergeants and units. They were thoroughly strict on the parade ground, which in the barrack room. They treated us, our two treated us, like normal human beings. Some had a rough passage in the barrack rooms. But on the parade ground, we all had a rough passage. We were all straight alike.
I'll come to that, yeah. What about, so you got on fairly well. What about, as you got to know the lads in your squad, how did they, I mean, was there any problems there, or were they all, did you all mush?
We all looked in together. There was only one problem, lad. When he had things come from home, it was like a little squirrel in a corner and buried in his wings. So they decided they were going to stop him like this. When we had parcels come, if there's anything we didn't like, we swapped and shared one with the other. So I mean, sometimes you had a parcel from Red Cross or from your particular church or from your particular council or something like that. They used to come from all places, and normally it's something you like that you didn't like, it is, and you made it like, and you just swap. Or if my mother or my wife sent me books, girlfriend, I should say, yes, then always send me books, and I'm just passing around. But this bloke, you know, little fella, he never passed anything around, so they said, we'll get him one day, and eventually they did.
What did they do to him?
Well, they knew they were parcels. Parcels always come different to letters, you see, and either parcel to pick up. So somebody had seen it with a decent sized parcel, so they said, we'll get it. So they stretched a string across the door, and he walked in because he went full length. And he'd opened his parcel before he got to us. Anyway, he opened it and everything come out and scattered on the floor. So he lost it all. He lost it all. Because he also hadn't found it, hadn't seen it. He'd come this way because he couldn't know anything about it. He didn't get nothing out of that parcel.
Did you get on well with them? I mean,
Oh, yes.
Some of them sound, the Liverpool ones you mentioned, sound if they might have been a bit rougher than you.
They were rough.
Did the swearing or anything bother you?
No, I mean, working the pit now as well didn't bother me at all.
Did it make your language worse?
No, it didn't make my language any different. We had a farmer with us. He came from North Yorkshire somewhere. And that's one thing he could fit in. And he'd always got a smile on his face, red face, and always got a smile on his face. He couldn't walk straight, he couldn't march, but he was the case. But when we were out on manoeuvres once or twice, we'd be behind bushes, and he'd tell us what some, that sort of cow was, and what that sort of cow was, and all this and other. But he was the case.
Well, there was no bullying then amongst.
No. One thing I never come across any bullying at all in our back room, in any of my life at all, through the organ. I never come across any bullying.
And no stealing?
Well, you never knew. Because they'd got the same as you, and seen things that you lost was your own personal things. There was no stealing money, obviously, but none of us had ever got any. I think there was only, later on in life, there was only one bloke that ever had any money. But us in that barrack room, we've only got what we all had. We all had the same, more or less.
Now, what would a... To look at a typical day's training then, you know, perhaps yeah. Looking at what you did for your training, how would your day start then?
Well, the first thing, as you see in all the films and everything, PT. The corporal took you out somewhere on PT. Sometimes it'd be on the square, sometimes it'd be a run round the huts for so long. But that was always the first thing. Invariably, that was first thing after breakfast, to get your breakfast down. And then you were ready for going on parade then. You always paraded, everybody paraded on the parade ground in the morning. It was about 10 o'clock, the first parade.
And how did you take to foot drill? I mean, you'd have to learn foot drill, wouldn't you? How did you take to it? Did you understand why you were doing it?
Oh, yes, I understand why we were doing it. I'd made my mind up to make it my life, I was in, to enjoy it, because I knew I couldn't get out of it, to enjoy it. And that's it, some lads didn't. Some lads never put their mind into enjoy it or like it at all. They didn't like it from the day they went in, and didn't like it from the day they went out. My mate didn't. My best pal in the army.
But you got on with drill. You enjoyed.
Yeah, I got on with the drill. I did the drill, and then after the foot drill, you eventually went on to drill sport. We come in for anti-aircraft. We did foot drill first, all shapes and sizes, out on the fields and everything, map reading and everything, all that.
What did that involve then? Manoeuvres out in the fields.
Well, there was a bit of ground roundabout, obviously, where you could go out and we've got imitation guns or anything like that. You took your own rifle because you had to clean when you come back. No live ammunition then, and you give them points to pick out that you've been pointed out in the room on map reading, and you have an imaginary enemy target. On the ground, and find your best way to get to it without being seen and things like that. In other words, keeping your head down and keeping your tummy on the ground.
What about?
We didn't do a lot.
What about rifle training? I mean, did they teach you to shoot?
Yes, we had rifle practice. There was one. I never knew where the. I don't remember where the rifle range was at all. But there was a rifle range close by. I don't think there was one in the actual barracks. But. We did the rifle practice with live ammunition later on, but we pulled the machine guns to pieces, got all the rifle pieces with the two pieces, the magazine and the bolt, and the rifles are behind you, see. But you had to pull the machine gun to pieces.
Which one? The Bren?
The Bren and the Vickers. We only had the Vickers once, but mostly Brens. The Brens had just come in then. Of course, you had to put it back in the quickest time. And for that was back against my ability, you see. There also must be two of you together, then you're pulling the machine gun to pieces. And you're back at the pulling groups around the tables, below the table or on the floor, and stopwatch. We'll see which group put it back quickest, or pull it to pieces and put it back again straight away quickest. I mean, that's, we have some good tools in that respect.
What about, you had lectures in the history of the Royal Artillery.
The first lecture we had all together at the beginning was of how the RA was formed, how long it had been going, and all that. And the motto, you be wherever, you know. But anyway, that took most of the afternoon. And one thing I remember, and the artillery, the Royal Artillery, are unique for being shaven to the bone. Nobody you couldn't have beards. I think they don't have moustache, but you couldn't have a beard.
Now, after the after this, then you moved on to the guns, the anti-aircraft guns.
After the first month, so we went on to the doing practice on the guns. So they got two dummy guns. Well, there were guns that said that they weren't firing, they couldn't fire. I don't think that they breach on for that particular reason.
Now, what guns were they?
They're 3.7 static guns. Then static guns, they were fixed, you see. And finders and predictors with no radar then, because there were no insights to the predictors, anything like that.
So there was the gun, the height finder, and the predictor. Well, let's look at them one by one.
They were bolted down on the playground. So
and you'd have to learn all these jobs.
All the words. The predictor would go round on the box and probably get false readings and things like that. And say with the height finder, that would go round and turn and twist.
Now, let's look at them first. And what did the predictor do? How did it work? And how would you work it?
Well,
if you still
know. I was a height finder, man.
But you'd learn all of them, though,
but
wouldn't you?
We went round them all.
Yeah.
But just then eventually, whichever you fancied or you work best at, the sergeant put you on board. I preferred the height finder.
Well, we'll come to that. What about the predictor, though? How did that work? Do you remember now? I know it's not easy.
It's because remember, it was a big square box on a tripod. Well, it was fastened on a tripod knob, but it was fastened to the ground, this one. And it was movable, and it was connected to the radar station. And the radar station gave emission information to the predictor. Now the height finder was connected to the predictor. And the predictor picked up information from the height finder, or did the other way around, give information to the height finder. Which, I mean, in daylight, you were working without the radar, eventually. The radar gave you information that you've got aircraft coming and all that, and which way direction coming. Then the predictor and the height finder took over with the guns. So at night time, the radar gives information goes that way around.
Now, how did the predictor, would it actually move?
The predictor transferred the information that the height finder given, that's the height of the plane and the angle, went to the predictor. And the predictor predicted what it said, predicted the information to the gunners, what angle to set on the gun, what fuels to put on the shell. All that come from the predictor. After the height finder and give the information to the predictor or the radar give it. So you understand at night time the height finder was not good.
And
so
how would,
unless you've got an object in the searchlight.
How would you get the information out of the predictor? Would it just sort of have a dial?
Well, it's on the dials. I forget what the dials look like.
That's fair enough. It's a long time. Now what about your thing, the height finder? How did that work?
Well, you sat watching the prisms in the joints, and you was given a preliminary idea from where it was. So you turned the height finder so its scopes were looking somewhere where the object was, and you had to carry on till you found that object in your height finder. And there was divisions inside the viewing of the height finder, and from those divisions, I think the fleet must have done this, transferred those measurements to the height it was and to the distance it was away from you at that time, relevant to the angle.
And what made you good at that, or did you just like it?
It's probably because I was using machines that worked. I mean, that's a type of machine. I mean, if you're working on a lathe or a drilling machine, you're watching things through invariably glasses or a shield or something, and using micrometers and things like that, it's the same.
Now, what about the actual jobs on the gun team? I think you said there's 10.
There were many jobs on the gun team because they were all the same. Yeah, the IT of the gun he got the information to set the fuse, and you told him if he says set 2.5, 1.3, 1.4, you set that particular fuse. Imaginary in the workout, but on the actual side, you set the actual fuse. And then you set those, and either you took it to the gun, or somebody else picked it up and took it to the gun, put it in the breech, and it was rammed in the breech, and fired.
But you didn't do that much.
No, I didn't do much of it. And because the gun wasn't so easy to handle as the smaller guns. It's still got a seat and wound the handles.
Now, so that you spent a lot of time in the second month doing that.
Yes.
Now, what about so after that? That'd be an afternoon. So, what would you do in the evenings?
Well, in the evenings, we were free unless you were on guard or fire duty. Well, you were free straight after tea, and the tea was 4:30. So by say 5:30, if you wanted to go out, you were out. If you wanted to stay in, you were in, but you were free. And you were free to go out at camp. Yeah, you never have to have a pass or anything, as long as you got your pay book with you. Which was your identification, of course. And you had to go past the guard room to get out, of course. And he was out till 1 minute to midnight.
What would you do? Would you have much money to go out? I mean,
no, didn't have at all. Myself, I never played any sport, because I was going to school all the time. My time was taken for school. So I never played any sport whatsoever. Up to me going in the army, except dancing. My occupation, hobby was dancing, so with my wife, see. So I found out that Victoria Hall in Oswestry Street, it was only threats for soldiers, Tuesday and Saturday. And I used to go Tuesday and Saturday for all the Civil Guard and dance. Dance for anybody, I mean, I could dance for anybody at that time. And I got friends with one of our sergeants. He always went with his wife, he always went with her. He couldn't dance, and she was a lovely dancer. I won a competition with her while I was there. I think I've been in this story before. A box of chocolates and a pair of silk stockings. A pair of stockings, I'm not saying it was silk stockings. A pair of stockings and a box of chocolates. And
so that was your hobby. Did you drink at all?
Very little. In fact, until I'd been in the army, I only had a drink. We were just now and again, and wife and I never made a habit of going out drinking because we went dancing. And in those days, there was no bars at the dance halls, only on the special occasions, such as annual events, where a bar was organised and it had got to be fully looked after. We weren't just up as you couldn't go around the bar like they do now. I mean, they'll never dance it. They'll go out, there's a good bar these days. But there's no bars at dances, only annual dances, such as 3 or 4 we used to go to. But we used to go to dances at home 2 and 3 times a week, sometimes 4, depends. But of course, it cost a lot then. But anyway, these dances at Oswestry, they cost threepence.
Was there anything else you'd do?
Went to the pictures. We had pictures come to Garrison Theatre. We go to pictures in Oswestry. That was only 2 or 3 times for us soldiers.
What about this Garrison Theatre? Was that a proper theatre?
Proper theatre, proper built theatre. All these camps had proper Garrison theatres built.
And what would it just be cinema, or would you have shows?
There were cinemas brought, and there were shows from these travelling ends of people come. And when they came, they'd be there probably for 2 days, 2 shows a day, so that everybody got a chance to go see. Could get everybody in one show.
Were they any good, the ends of people?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They were good. In fact, later on, I was up in the right bit north of Scotland, there was a garrison there built. And we had them up there once, and it was great.